For almost 10 years, Amazon paid its staff $5,000 to quit. This sounds wrong, right? If staff want to quit, why would you pay them? Why would Amazon try to entice happy staff members with a bonus for leaving? For most people, this pay-to-quit scheme seems irrational. But my guest today disagrees. In today's show, Uri Ghanizi, the world-renowned behavioral economist who holds the Atkinson Endowed Chair in Behavioral Economics at the University of California, explains why this pay-to-quit scheme makes sense. On Nudge Today, Uri will walk me through the framing effect. Put simply, the framing effect suggests that our choices are influenced by the way they are framed through different wording, settings, and situations. To explain, here's an example. Imagine you're at your local supermarket and you see two yogurts. One says it's 95% fat-free. The other says it contains 5% fat. Which do you pick? Well, most people pick the 95% fat-free option. Now, both options contain the same amount of fat, but the way the message is framed changes the decision. These frames affect us in all walks of life. Today, Uri explains how framing has boosted Coca-Cola sales, encouraged thousands to contribute to Wikipedia, and how it fueled Peloton's growth. And, of course, you'll learn why Amazon paid employees to quit. All of that coming up in today's Nudge after this quick break. Marketing Made Simple, hosted by Dr. JJ Peterson, is brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals, and it is the podcast I'd love to recommend today. Marketing Made Simple brings you practical tips to make your marketing easy and, more importantly, make it work. In a recent episode, JJ spoke about the power of one-liners. He shared how these short business descriptions are the foundation for your marketing efforts, and I think that episode is well worth a listen. So tune into Marketing Made Simple wherever you get your podcasts. Today's guest on Nudge is Uri Ghanizi, author of the brilliant new book, Mixed Signals, and here he is introducing himself.
My name is Uri Ghanizi. I'm a behavioral economist at the University of California, San Diego, and my main topic of research is incentives.
Now, the framing effect fascinates me. The idea that you can change the decision someone will make simply by reframing the choice or reframing the message is pretty cool. So I spent a good hour chatting to Uri about how it works and what us marketers can learn from the effect. To kick off, Uri offered an example of how framing works. He gave a real-world example from Coca-Cola and how they failed to properly frame a vending machine promotion that they ran.
The CEO of Coca-Cola had a great idea. Let's put a thermometer in the vending machine. And then if the regular price is a dollar, on hot days, let's charge people $1.50, which makes sense, right? People are willing to pay more for a cold drink on hot days, right? That's what he wanted to do. It's Econ 101. That's what we do. In airlines, we do it, right? In many other places, we do it. Hotels charge different prices on different dates and things. But of course, people got upset. What do you mean? Why are you trying to extortion, right? We need the Coca-Cola now, so you're going to charge more. People were upset. What he should have done is different. He should have said the regular price is $1.50. And on a cold day, you'll get a discount and it's going to be only a dollar. It's exactly the same pricing, right? On a cold day, you pay a dollar. On a hot day, you pay $1.50. The first one is a surcharge, and the second one is I'm a nice company, I'm giving you a discount.
Don't frame it as a 50-cent surcharge, frame it as a 50-cent discount on cold days. Over the past summer, I spent a month in Australia, and I noticed how almost every restaurant in Australia charges a surcharge for using your debit or credit card. And I think this is so silly. It makes the customer feel like they're getting a bad deal, having to pay more simply to use our cards. And yet, there's such a simple solution to get around this. Don't say there is a surcharge on cards. Say there is a discount on cash payments. Write 2% discount for those who pay with cash. And that subtle reframing, that'll make the penalty more palatable. This isn't just my own thoughts, my own musings. There is a study from 2000, which was commissioned by the EU, and it looked at just this. They contacted 150 cardholders in the Netherlands and found that 74% of them regarded credit card surcharges as bad, and yet only 49% of them regarded the equivalent cash discount as bad. Reframing your offer can shift how the majority of people perceive it. Uri gave me another example, and this time it was from AMC movie theaters in the States.
A very similar thing happened a couple of months ago with AMC theaters in the US. So they sent a statement saying, look, inflation, we have to raise prices. What we're going to do is charge more for premium seats. So if you want to sit in the center of the theater, we're going to charge you more. And people got upset. You know, we're already paying so much money, and now you're starting to get more money from us. What they should have done is say, look, inflation, cost of labor, we have to raise prices. We are sorry. We know that you're paying so much. So what we are going to do is to try and help you is to offer you discount on some. If you're willing to sit in the first row or on the sides, we'll give you discount. Exactly the same price for the same seat, but with a very different thing. I think that if you do it, it's really great. You can think about it in other cases, not just with pricing. So think about going back to work. Lots of companies are struggling with this now. So we had COVID, people stayed home and worked from home. It worked well, not perfectly, but well. And now some companies want workers to come back to the office. Now, if you tell them, okay, the party is over, you need to come back to work full time. We saw it in many cases that employees just quit. They don't want to go back. So say that you want them to come back for 3 days. The right way to say it, to frame it is, look, COVID is over. We need to come back to the office full time. But because you proved yourself to be so reliable and so good at working together, it's fine with us if you come only for 3 days. Right. So instead of how to, you know, saying you must come for 3 days, basically to frame it as you need to come back for 5 days, but because you're so good, we'll ask you to do it only for 3 days. So again, the way you frame it, I think, sends a signal about what you care about. It's not just, oh, people are stupid and don't understand. It's really about the signal that you get from it.
AMC movie theaters shouldn't put a premium price on the best seats. They should give discounts for the worst seats. And your boss shouldn't demand you to be in the office for 3 days. She should offer 2 days work from home benefit for all the employees who hit their targets. There's another example from Uri's book, which highlights how powerful framing can be. It's a study Uri ran where he looked to see how different framings of different discounts would affect purchase decisions. He and his team studied two different discounts in a real world study. The discounts were for those people who were in the process of buying a car. The first discount, shown to the first group, was $140 off the full price of a car. Now, $140 is a lot of money, but compared to the full cost of a new car, it might seem a little small. So the team came up with an equivalent discount, but framed it differently. For the second group, they offered a $450 prepaid gas card. Suddenly, it seems like a much better deal. $450 free cash to spend on fuel, not bad. Now, obviously, the deals are the same in monetary value, but Uri wanted to see if they were perceived differently due to the frame, and he found that they were. In fact, Uri found that the gas card discount more than doubled the success rate of the incentive, so the people were 2 times more likely to go on and purchase the car when they were offered the gas card rather than the money off. In further testing, he found that the effect was maintained even when the gas card had a lower value than the car discount. So car shoppers responded more favorably to a $250 gas card than a $450 discount on the actual vehicle purchase. See, there is a tendency in marketing and business to think only of the concrete details, like how much discount can we offer? How many days do we need people in the office? But Uri's work shows that these concrete details can be perceived differently depending on how they're framed. So I think we should spend as much time thinking about how we frame our incentives as we do planning the incentive itself. Uri says this doesn't just benefit the people behind the incentive, but also customers as well.
For example, if I go to a restaurant, I'm much more upset about spending money on parking than on an extra glass of wine. It might cost the same, but if I buy an extra glass of wine, I feel, well, that's worth it. I want to treat myself. If I pay for parking, I feel that I wasted the money.
Good framing can make diners at a restaurant feel they are getting a better deal. Uri has looked at this himself with a fascinating study, but this time on Singapore taxi drivers. Now, his goal was to get the taxi drivers to walk more. See, like most taxi drivers around the world, the Singaporean cabbies spent most of their day in their car. Yuri was tasked with getting them out and getting them moving. Here's how he did it.
So what we try to do with the taxi drivers have one of the problems that they have is that they don't walk enough. We wanted them to walk more. We gave them a pedometer. We did all the good stuff. And we had two types of incentives. In one case, they got $100 if they met the step goal for the month. In the other case, we looked for something that cost $100, but was very painful for them. Turns out that what was really painful for them was the leasing of the car. So they have to lease the car, and every day they have to pay $100. So it's about $100 a day for leasing the car, depending on the car model and things like that, but about this money. And that's really painful for them. So many of them, even on their day off, for example, will drive just to cover this $100. Or they'll tell you, look, until lunch, I drive to cover the leasing, then another 2 hours for the fuel, and only then I start making money. So it's really at the top of their head, and they really hate it. So we had one group that received the $100. The other group, we said, you'll get a day off for leasing. Right, which is a painful expense for them. And indeed, this group was much more likely to reach the step goal that we gave.
Yuri shares the full results of this experiment in his book. He writes that the group with the pure cash incentives walked 1,500 steps more than average, so more than those without an incentive. But the drivers with the free rent listing treatment, so the same value of incentive, but had to be spent on their rent listing, well, they walked 2,000 steps more than average. So they walked 500 steps more than those with the pure cash incentives. Offering the free rental for the taxi worked more than offering the same value in pure cash. What's more, this difference in behavior was notable in the 5 to 7 months after the incentive ended.
So if you can find something that people really care about and use this as incentives, your incentives can go a longer way than just cash.
Now, so far we've covered incentives where the recipient is gaining something. $200 to cover the taxi rental, a glass of wine at a restaurant, for example. But of course, there are disincentives where something is taken away if an action isn't completed. A salesperson will lose their commission if they don't hit their targets, for example. Prime customers lose free shipping if they unsubscribe. Yuri shares how these loss aversion incentives can be just as powerful.
So loss aversion, a bit like mental accounting and many other things like regret that I talk in the book, is a way to make your incentives go further. So imagine that there is a nice paper by my friends in schools. They give, they try to encourage teachers to do better job. So some teachers, they tell them, if you'll meet certain goals by the end of the year, we'll give you, I don't remember the amount, say $3,000. And to other people, other teachers say, you're $3,000. If you'll meet the goals by the end of the year, you keep $3,000. Otherwise, you have to pay us back. In principle, it's the same. The end of the year, you'll have it. But once you get the money, you really feel that you have it, that it's yours already. And if you'll have to give it back, it's a loss. And losses are more painful. That Kahneman and Tversky discussed it already long ago, that losses are more painful than gains. And that way, in both cases, you pay $3,000 for reaching the goal. But in the case where you give the money up front and they have to pay back, you get a much stronger impact.
There's a particularly good example of the power of loss aversion in Yuri's book. He asks you to imagine that you are a factory worker at a high-tech factory in China. Your job is to focus on the production and distribution of consumer electronics. On top of earning an average weekly base salary of around $50, you are also incentivized by a weekly bonus when your team's production reaches a certain threshold. The bonus is $50 for every week and your team does above average production. Now, this is a fairly standard incentive, one that almost all of us will have seen at businesses we work at, an incentive for hitting targets. But imagine if the bonus was given another way. Imagine if the company granted you a provisional bonus of $50 right at the start of the week. So you get the $50 in your bank at the start of the week. You have the bonus immediately. And then if during the week your team's weekly production is below the average, then that bonus will be taken away. Again, You have the exact same bonus, but in one scenario, the bonus is gained through hard work. And in the other scenario, the bonus is lost through lazy work. Now, this example isn't theoretical. It is a real-world study from a Chinese high-tech factory. Now, the study found that workers' productivity did increase in both groups compared to the baseline. So those who gained the bonus, well, their productivity increased. And those who lost the bonus, if they didn't perform well, their productivity increased as well. But those in that second loss-framing variant, those who lost the bonus if they were unproductive, they significantly outperformed the team of workers who were motivated by gaining the rewards. The effects persisted for 4 months after the experiment was conducted, so it wasn't just a short-term boost, and it shows that losing a bonus feels worse than gaining one, so people worked harder when they had something to lose. Now look, we are only scratching the surface of how these subtle frames can influence decisions, and in a bit, Yuri will explain how to use framing for a small incentive, why Peloton sold more when they charged more, and of course, why Amazon offered staff $5,000 to quit. All of that after this quick break. It is common to hear that marketing is ever-changing, that this year is different and that customers are evolving. Honestly, in the 10 years I've worked in marketing, those predictions have been largely bogus. But last year was different. AI, the proliferation of ChatGPT, and the global use of these tools does seem to have changed marketing in significant ways. To better understand this change, I'd recommend checking out HubSpot's State of Marketing report. The 2024 edition is the all-in-one guide for everything happening this year and how marketing has changed fairly dramatically in the past 12 months. HubSpot surveyed more than 1,400 marketing pros from across the world and curated the top trends they are thinking about. If you download the free report, you'll get all the info you need to genuinely understand how marketing is changing and to think critically about how your marketing strategies might need to evolve. Visit hubspot.com/state of marketing to get your copy. Okay, welcome back to the show. Now, many of the incentives we've talked about so far are fairly large, big sums of money. But many of us, we can't offer that. Many of us need to incentivize people without a big budget. At a previous company I worked for, I needed to get 500 reviews for our product. I only had a $1,000 budget, so the max I could offer each person for a review was just $2. This is not the most enticing offer out there. I'll give you $2 for a review. You're not going to do that, are you? So I asked Yuri what I should have done instead. How should I have framed my incentive when I only had such a small amount of cash to offer?
So my student, Alex Seamus, is my former student. It has a very nice experiment in which he looks at this. So he gave a task to people, and the more effort they put, the more money they made. In one case, he just asked them to do that, and they did okay. In the other case, he told them, here's a small amount of money. If you'll do it, you'll get, the more you'll do, the more money you'll get. But that was a very small amount of money. Didn't get much of the effect. And then he had a pro-social incentive. So he said, if you'll press harder, if you'll do, you put more effort, the money will go to charity. And that was actually much more effective than paying people. Now, the interesting part was that paying others, the effect was kind of flat in the sense that when he raised the amount of money that he gave to a significant amount of money, it didn't have impact when the money went to charity. It did have an impact when the money went to the self. So if I'm working for a small amount of money, it's better to motivate me. You can just give the money. Like you said, $5, just donate to charity. Let me choose a charity to donate. If you can give me a lot of money, just give it to me as cash. Not to charity.
If you've only got a small incentive to give, don't give that incentive as cash directly. Offer the equivalent cash, but as a donation to charity. Pret a Manger, the cafe that many of you will have seen in London and across the world, well, they have a similar practical example of this. To improve their customer service, they give out £50 bonuses to staff who perform well. Now, £50 is not huge compared to the average salary, so Pret devised something interesting. Instead of letting staff pocket this incentive themselves, they forced the recipient to give the voucher to a colleague who had helped them. Now, you might think this would make people less motivated, but in fact, the opposite was true. Just like what Yuri shared earlier, staff are motivated by this charitable gift more than they are by pure cash. Staff appeared to work harder when the incentive was a chance to gift the £50 rather than when the £50 was given to them directly. Now, many of us who are building incentives will have no money to offer. So how can we motivate people without offering them any cash? Well, Wikipedia has a really interesting solution to this. See, in 2007, there was a big drop in the number of contributions and edits on the Wikipedia website. The number of actual editors editing the site was falling sharply. You may well know this already, but Wikipedia relies on editors just out of the kind will of their heart. They don't do it for any money, and they didn't have any money to incentivize these people. So they had to come up with another tactic to keep the editors from leaving. So Wikipedia founder Jimmy Wales designed the Wikipedia Awards. These awards, they vary by scarcity and significance, ranging from Editor of the Week, a recognition award from the community that is frequently handed out to thank editors for their work, to a much bigger award, the Wikimedian of the Year, an annual award presented at the Wikimania conference to celebrate the major achievements of an individual. And then the top award is Order of the Day, which is awarded very rarely to a Wikimedia developer for exceptional service to the community. These rewards are all intangible with no financial incentive. But despite this, they were incredibly successful. Jana Gallus, who studied the Wikipedia Awards in 2017, reported that these awards increased newcomer retention by 20%. Editors who joined were 20% more likely to stick around simply because they had a chance to win one of these rewards. And this effect, it would last for more than 1 year after an initial award was given. You were more likely to stay after receiving one award for more than a year. Scarce public recognition worked, and it probably worked more than paying the editors would have done. Offering zero cash incentives, that can work. And Yuri has a word of warning when it comes to cash incentives. In fact, he says that sometimes offering too large of a cash incentive, too much money, well, that can be a turnoff. In his book, he writes how he strongly advises against the $1 million lottery setup for those who had got the COVID vaccine. See, in Australia, those who got the vaccine were entered into a lottery where they had the chance to win $1 million. Yuri didn't like this incentive. Here's why.
So imagine that Pfizer, you know, someone from Pfizer contacts you, or someone from my university contacts a student, which happens a lot, or contact normal people, and ask them, look, we have a new pill that, you know, against headaches, doesn't have too bad of side effects. Can you please, are you willing to participate in our study and take this one and just stay over here for another few hours so we can observe you? And we know it's safe. It's not a problem. We'll give you $50 for your effort. Many people will agree to do it. And in fact, that's how they do many of these studies. Now imagine the same story, but instead of $50, I'll pay you $50,000 to stay. Maybe you'll take it, but you'll be very worried, right? You know, why are they paying me so much money? There's something must be wrong. You don't pay $50,000 to get time, right? You get $50,000 to do something risky, right? So again, it signals that something is wrong with this. And that's why I did what I didn't like about giving this lottery to people. You don't want people to associate, oh, I'll take the vaccine because of the money, but it has to be a lot of money for me to take it. So incentives that I liked much more and were done in many places were smaller amounts, so say $50, but that you have to spend in some local establishments. And then I can really tell you, look, you want your coffee, your neighborhood coffee to survive, the bookstore to survive, you need to get vaccinated, put on your mask and go out and visit them. And we're going to give you money to spend in this local establishments. And I think that sends the right signal, that it's not, oh, you should get the vaccine because you might get rich. It should be, look, you should get the vaccines because that way we can open up, we can save these local establishments and get back to normal.
Now, before rounding up, Yuri had one other fantastic example for me. He explained how Peloton actually sold more bikes when they increased their price. Here's why.
So price equals quality. That's something that we do. We want to buy a bottle of wine. Usually we buy the $25. Tonight we're going to celebrate something. So we'll go to the store and tell the seller, please give us a $50 bottle of wine. Why? Because we associate higher price with higher quality, which is true in many cases. If I buy a speaker, the more expensive speaker will probably be better. it or buy a laptop there. You know, it usually works, but not always. With wine, you know, who knows? So the Peloton story, the CEO said that when they introduced the bike, they charged about $1,000, a bit under $1,000. And people didn't want to buy it. They thought that it's probably a low quality because why else would they sell it for that? They doubled the price and immediately everyone bought they sold out. If it's $2,000, it must be a very high quality bike.
John Foley, the Peloton CEO, said this himself during an interview with Yahoo Finance. He said, in the very, very early days, we charged $1,200 for the Peloton bike. And what turned out was that we heard from customers that the bike must be poorly built if you're charging just $1,200 for it. See, there's a membership as well for Peloton, which is added on top, and some of the cost of the bike was being factored into the membership. But John Foley said they changed this. He said, we charged $2,000 for the bike, and sales increased because people said, oh, it must be a pretty quality bike. This is known in psychology as the Verbalen effect. It's something I've covered before. But there are plenty of studies, especially with luxury goods, that show that people buy more when the price is higher. And it's another example of how reframing your product just by changing the price can change perception. Anyway, to finish up, Yuri told me about one of the smartest incentives he's ever heard. And honestly, this one did surprise me. It's not a discount. It's not a type of commission. It's Amazon offering employees $5,000 to quit. Here's why this incentive works.
I love it. So I think that that's one of the smartest incentives you can think about. So in many cases, if you ask your worker, do you like working here? They'll tell you yes, because their value to the company depends on how much they like it. So if I work at my university and they don't want to be there and I'm there just because, I don't know, I wait for my pension or So I'm not going to be very good at what I'm doing. I'm not going to do good research, teaching, committees. I'm just not going to be a good citizen. I'll be there, but very often it's hard to really figure out who these people are. In economics, we do something that is called the incentive compatible. So instead of asking people, are you happy here? Do you want? We give people money and say that you go to the company and you tell your workers, so you choose a segment of people that say that you have 100 of them and you need to let go of 20 of them. You tell them, you know what? Here's $5,000. If you want to quit, we don't want you to quit. We want you to stay. But if you want to quit, that's absolutely fine. No hard feelings. Just take the $5,000 bonus and we'll depart as friends, right? What you do by doing this is get the people that are not that happy with staying, that are kind of on the fence, they will take it. The people that are excited about working for you, they're not going to take it, right? So if you'll choose the right amount to give them, you can find the sweet spot where it's going to be 20% of the people, depending, you know, on what you want. And these people will leave. And by doing this, you select the people. The people that will stay are people that really want to be there. They didn't just tell you, I really want to work for you. They really showed that they really want to work for you, because otherwise they could have taken them. And another side benefit is that this sunk cost, the feeling that, oh, I could have received this $5,000. I chose to stay. I must really like it. And then the people who stay will have to show themselves that it was the right decision, that they made the right decision by staying. So that could be an added benefit to this.
The framing effect is incredibly powerful. Subtly changing how you frame your incentive or disincentive can dramatically change behavior. It can encourage Singapore taxi drivers to walk more, Chinese manufacturers to work harder, Wikipedia editors to contribute more, and even Pret-a-Manger staff to be a little friendlier. Incentives, though, are much, much bigger than just framing. There is heaps more to cover, and if you're interested in learning more, I'd suggest tuning into the two previous episodes I did with Yuri. Just search for Nudge Podcast and Yuri Ganesi, and you'll find them. Do also check out Yuri's book, Mixed Signals. I've left the link to that in the show notes. It's fantastic. And if you've enjoyed today's show, please do leave me a 5-star review wherever you listen. This really helps. And do make sure you're subscribed and following Nudge wherever you listen as well. And if you want, you can subscribe to my weekly newsletter for an extra behavioral science tip each week. Just head to nudgepodcast.com and click newsletter to sign up. Okay, thanks for listening, folks. I'm your host, Phil Agnew, and I will be back next week with another episode of Nudge. Cheers.